Good morning, and welcome to WDRT Show Conversation. My name is Dina Eccles, and I like to invite guests who pique my interest and whom I believe will offer food for thought. So it is with my guest today. She is Janice Turbin, and she's running as an independent for the office of Vernon County Sheriff. I want to point out that inviting Janice to this show is not an endorsement, and other hosts may invite opposing views and candidates, but I wanted to understand more about what makes this person tick. So here we are. Welcome, Janice.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to be here.
I always like to start in the beginning, you know, like where you grew up, what kind of, you know, formed the person that you are today.
Oh, well, I grew up here in Viroqua during a time when summers were spent at the outdoor swimming pool and winters were spent at the Park Bowl ice skating, and Friday and Saturday nights, you were at the Temple Theater watching movies. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the dime store, and it was a great town to grow up in. I don't think we always know that when we're teenagers, but it's a good community here. And my parents are both from Westby originally. My dad was a truck driver for Schneider, and my mom did some office work and ultimately worked at VMH in the offices there. And I would have to say that most of my views come from my dad. Mm. So blessed to have a dad who was very diplomatic. I mean, talking politics, anything. He always brought both sides. He never tried to get you to see only one side.
I think our dads might have been brothers.
I that could be. Yeah, I'm really lucky. I don't think there's anything wrong in families when they have a good, strong view together. Mm-hmm. That's fine. I just think I was blessed, again, with someone who enjoyed history. Mm-hmm. And he always seemed to bring the history into it so that I understood, you know, where those views came from and why. And I miss him greatly. We lost him in 2014, but it would have been nice to have him around right now. So I think that's where most of that came from. He was a calm man, and he was a union steward for a while, so he really had to understand both sides of
and how to work with people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you inherited that.
I did.
All right. So, reading about you, you talk about your leadership journey, your journey towards leadership.
Yeah, it really started back in the 90s, and I hadn't realized that there was such a shift happening in the mid 90s. I was working for a chain of beauty salons, and I was their educator, so I would go around to 20-some salons and teach whatever they needed. And my boss had asked me, he said, can you do a manager's conference? And I'm like, well, my goodness, I said, I'm sure I can. I was excited about it, but wasn't sure what they needed. And so the first thing I did was kind of realize, how do I feel when I go into all these salons? What's the difference in the cultures and how I feel when I walk in? And there were two salons, and they had the same owner but different managers, and he would walk into one, it would be very quiet, very reserved, and I would go in the other one and it was just electric. And it really was about who was at the helm. And we also had another shop. They had no turnover, because turnover was big in the 90s. We just couldn't keep people.
Kind of like, no.
Yeah, yeah. And so I went to that shop and watched for a while, and their manager was not a hairdresser, which was not the norm back then. Back then, it was usually a hairdresser who got a manager's license, and they managed the salon. And I went in there and watched for a while, and you would never know she was the manager. She would work the desk. She would sweep hair. She was washing towels. She was getting the girls whatever they needed. And I realized it was really more of a service position, but she was so well respected, people never left. And then it led me to doing some research, and I found this wonderful book called Flight of the Buffalo. And it had such a strange title, I was intrigued. And so what I learned was, the theory behind it is, in a herd of buffalo, if you take out the lead buffalo, the rest will just wander around. They don't know what to do because they haven't been told. So they were easily slaughtered, sadly, back in the day. But when geese fly, they all have to know how to lead. So when one is tired, they just move to the rear, and the next one moves up. And so if everybody knows how to lead, they do better. And one of the authors was actually part owner of Johnsonville, a Wisconsin company. Mm-hmm. So he talks about how they took that theory into their company and helped people take more of a leadership position, more ownership in what they were doing and the production that went from there.
More accountability, so, more ownership.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had written that Flight of the Buffalo, so I looked it up. And learning to let employees lead.
Yes. Very, I think we need to bring up leaders. I think when we keep them, again, like buffalo, where, and again, even the military has learned that all we get then are people who are good at taking orders. But they have knowledge, and they're not using it because they're simply doing what they're told.
Yeah, that pyramid thing doesn't really work very well. I think we're figuring it out.
Right.
Or so, even a school of fish. That's where I learned about it. You know, the school of fish will move, and one seems to be the leader, but when they turn, you know, it's the ones who were in the back who are now leading.
Right.
You know, to have more of that, inherent. It's inherent in us, I think. It's just a question of allowing it to come out. So that's what you started doing.
That's what I started doing.
Cool.
Yeah. And then from there, my husband had been injured at work and needed a long recovery. So it was important for us to move back home because we were in Chippewa Falls at the time. And when we came back... Back home to Viroqua.
They love that.
It's the safe place. It's home. It'll always be home, no matter what.
Okay.
And so we came back home for his recovery, and I really felt that things had shifted even within me. And because I had had the experience of really not doing hair so much anymore, but being an educator, I needed something more. So I answered an ad for the Family and Children's Center for a transport driver, and that led me working with at-risk youth. And my boss actually had her degree in what was called servant leadership. So there again, a whole nother experience of what I had been learning when I lived in Chippewa. You know, the same premise of building people up to be leaders, finding who they are, what brings out the best in them, and wanting them to succeed rather than just do what they're told. Right. And, of course, that helped me grow to eventually I was alternative education coordinator, working with different school districts and parents and very troubled kids. But sadly, being nonprofit in 2007, that ended.
Right.
And went to work for DeSoto Area Schools, wonderful school district. It has such an at-home feeling. You know, there's such a close-knit group over in that area, especially at Prairie View. It's just such a warm environment, and I enjoyed it. It was nice having kids that you could hug and laugh and talk with and not have to frisk their belongings.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed it, and I got to learn sign language, work with some kids that had autism, and it was a great experience, but it just never felt right. You know, square peg, round hole kind of thing. So when the opportunity came to work at the jail, my first day there, someone yelled, "Mrs. Turbin." And it was one of our former students at the Family and Children's Center. But I understood the environment, the people, and I fit, which is a strange thing to say that you feel comfortable at a jail.
But. No, that's great. But if you're wanting to be sheriff, I would think that that's a very important little piece to have there. Wow, what a wonderful journey, you called it. What a wonderful way to, and you very consciously keep stepping into it, stepping through it, I should say, I guess. I love that you focus on everyone's need to have the opportunity to lead and to learn learn about that. I mean, in one way, learning about it is simply just doing it, I think.
I think so.
You know,
because I don't think you have to have a title
right.
to be a good leader.
Right.
And we see that all the time. Mm-hmm. We see people that do well at that don't need a title or have a title, and they're always helping their group and being a leader. And mm-hmm. and I'm lucky because in the group that I work with right now, I don't think you would really be able to distinguish because everybody has such good leadership skills.
So what's your role now in the jail?
I am just an officer, but I am also the professional communications instructor.
Wait, the what?
Professional communications instructor.
Okay.
So as a jailer, I knew I wanted to do some instructor things. So I'm a general jail instructor, which means I could go to an academy and teach the new jailers. And then I wanted to be more specific. There are two, our POSC training, which is principles of, I have to think about this now for a minute, POSC, principles of subject control, which is the physical things that we do. And one of my coworkers is an instructor for that. And then I wanted the professional communications, because what we're learning, obviously, in corrections, you know, we don't want to go hands-on if we don't have to. We want to use our verbal skills as much as we can, and that seemed to be where I was most comfortable, so I wanted to teach that. So I do that within the agency. And again, leadership is not in the curriculum, but it is something that I teach.
Yeah, you can't help it. You were steeped in it.
Yep.
That's great.
Well, because you don't know what their professional goals are, even within the sheriff's office. You know, some of them may want to move up in rank, and to do that, they need to understand what good leadership looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, this is interesting because I've really never taken time to understand. You know, I mean, you said a correctional officer, and I wanted to salute you right away.
Oh.
You know, I don't have a lot of experience or knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that's probably true for most of the people listening.
I would think so. I think they have, being that we're a small town community, I think they think that it's just, you know, you go in and there's a few people there, some, you know, and I think a lot of them think, as a woman, I only deal with female inmates, and that is not how it is. We are in the blocks. About every 25 minutes, we go through the male and female blocks. And a lot of people don't know that for about 4 years, we housed state prisoners. Right. So we actually had, at some times, 80 to 90 state prison inmates in our jail. So it could be challenging at times.
I bet. What kind of, how many people are in the staff?
I believe, are we at 17?
Oh, it's small. I mean, it's not a large number of people.
Yeah. You need at least 4 on duty.
Well, I don't even know where the jail is. Where is the jail?
Oh, if you turn...
I don't know. I just knew you were running and sounded like a really good conversation, so let's do it.
So the jail is located... The sheriff's office is located... If you go to Quick Trip North and take a right... There, just past the old Ford dealership, there is a road to the left, and if you take that, it's called Bad Axe Court. And as you're coming down, you see a building straight ahead of you, and that's the sheriff's office. So that's where we house. The right side of the building is the jail, and the left side of the building is where the administrative offices are. Dispatch is located there, investigations, the sergeants, anything with road. Their evidence and things like that are all on the other side of the building.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting a good education here. I hope everyone else is. So, okay, now, what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? Oh, this year, nothing.
That's a lot, right?
No, this year, I have been enjoying the campaigning because it's nice after COVID to finally get out again. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, as a correctional officer, we are a strange breed of people, and being locked in a building for 12 hours, we tend to be very introverted on our time off. You know, it's that quick, let's get in our family time, our alone time, recharge before we go back and deal with the population that we do. So it's nice. Like music in the park, I love music in the park. So my every other Wednesday night, that is where I am. And I don't, you can say I'm campaigning, but I'm just really having fun. We do like to fish when we have time. haven't been writing much this summer, but I do like to write. That's where I find my peace. And we like to go down to Bad Axe Country Club down in Isofia. If you've never been down there, the most beautiful flowers you could find to purchase are down there. A wonderful gal, Cindy, and her brother Tom run that. And they're more like family. It doesn't feel like you're going down there just for a beer at a bar. It's really a family atmosphere and a friendly atmosphere. So we like to go down and visit them. And it's so beautiful. You sit outside and there's everything you look at is beautiful.
So preparing for this, you know, I did look at your Facebook page and Turban for Sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of fun, you know, because there you'd be at your concert, you know, or basically advertising the concert. And I'm like, wow, okay, she's not, you know, this is a good way because it's about community.
It is. It is. I see former classmates there. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a lot of new faces that I don't know, but every age group is there. Mm-hmm. It's just so much fun. Everybody having a good time. Just if you're not out front dancing, some are just dancing where they're standing. And it's a wonderful thing. I hope it never ends.
Mm. Yeah. And again, because of what you do and even how you're expressing it now, how the people who work there tend to be introverted, tend to not go out. These are all really important understandings. We need to understand what each other does. You know, as I've learned, I've been here about 20 years now living on a farm, and now I see what farmers have gone through, you know, and what that kind of life is. Talked to a woman yesterday who single-handedly has shelled 40 corn cobs.
Oh, my goodness.
Getting ready for winter. I was like, whoa. I came home and said, we are, like, way behind. But you know, so it's good. It's really a good thing to learn about that culture as well. And I think that's what, one of the things we can cover here. You know, and what you're expressing with the what you were witnessing in the change of management, mm-hmm. there's so much of that. And there's some clashes happening.
There is. There's the unwillingness to change. Mm-hmm. They see, but this has worked always. This is how we've always done it. But nothing changes if nothing changes.
Right. And it hasn't always worked.
No.
Like I was reading something yesterday about, it's not similar topic, but it's on topic, where the school in Missouri has just reinstated corporal punishment. And then I had to read further.
I don't even know what to say.
I know.
To that.
I saw your face, that look of shock, and that makes me glad to see that too. And I read further that since the 70s, which was when I was in school, that was stopping in many places. But there were still 19 states. There are still 19 states that allow it, and some are reinstating it. So that's what I say when there's a corporal thing, because I don't know about you, but if somebody hits me, I want to hit back.
Yeah, I thought that we knew that didn't work.
Yeah, no, apparently not. It's an interesting thing. But anyway, so when I saw your approaches, and as we'll get into more, I thought this is the kind of thing that I want to hear about anyway.
Right.
You know?
And that's good. Yeah, you know, to take it a step further, being in law enforcement, and we're always the lost, or not so much the lost. We are the hidden part of law enforcement. Excuse me. People don't see us. We don't get to be out on the road. We don't get to stop and have a cup of coffee and say hi to our
donuts.
Local neighbor. And donuts. I didn't want to go there,
but I did.
Donuts are great. So people forget about us.
Yeah.
And when you go to the academy, when you go to jail academy, they have a wonderful way of making you feel so much a part of law enforcement. And then you get to work, and it isn't that our sheriff's office doesn't recognize us. It's the fact that we're not seen. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see us on the Facebook page. You're not going to see us in the newspaper clippings.
Right.
We're not out and about. And sometimes we feel a little removed from law enforcement. Mm. But, you know, our military is even shifting. And being that we're a ranking system, I think it's a good comparison. There's a wonderful book called Turn the Ship Around, and it was Captain Dave Marquet, who had, you know, in the Navy, he rose up to captain. They were going to give him the USS Olympia, a nuclear submarine. So they sent him away to study for a year. And he had to know everything about this sub. He had to know the wiring. He had the dossiers on all the crew. And what happened at the last minute, they gave him the USS Santa Fe, which was the worst ranking ship in the Navy. It was never on time. It never completed its assignments. The crew, they never had anybody that would reenlist. It was just this, it was just the worst of the worst. So he comes in, and on the second day he decides, well, he's got to put a little pressure on this team. So they're gonna run a drill, and of course he starts barking orders, and the crewman next to him, who is supposed to, you know, the officer next to him who is supposed to repeat his orders, does, and nothing happens. He says, ahead two-thirds. The other officer yells, ahead two-thirds. Nothing happens, and he's a little confused. And he can see these officers start squirming, and they're looking a little uncomfortable, and he's like, okay, why is nothing happening? The ship didn't have an ahead two-thirds. This sub was built different and only had a one-third. And he said, so then why did you wow. yell the order? He goes, because you told me to. Wow. You told me to. And he realized these people had been on this ship for 2 years. They had all the knowledge, and all they had gotten good at was taking orders. Wow. And so it's a wonderful read if you get a chance to. But again, in the military that we think of just straight orders, here's a captain who learned. He goes, he never gave another order his whole time. And they went from worst to first, not just in that short, you know, a short period of time, in history.
Wow. Wow, that's a beautiful story. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to WDRT Show Conversations. My name is Dina Eccles, and my guest today in studio is running for the sheriff of Vernon County. She's Janice Durbin, and we are discussing her thoughts on the need to change the correctional system. So, Janice, as sheriff, if that were to happen, what would you hope to accomplish, and why?
Well, I see it more as a journey. I don't think I can go in there and change anything overnight. I think it's something that I see us doing together. I don't think it... Yes, it's a title that I would hold, but we have such good people that work there, and so many good ideas, and so many strengths and talent, that I really see it more as a collaborative, like all of us.
Yes, an evolution.
Yes, you know. So I see coming in and just meeting with everyone. I don't know all that needs work. I work on one side of the sheriff's office. I don't know what the needs are for the road officers. I don't know what's going on in investigations that they might need help with, or dispatch. I know they're shorthanded, as we all are. And so it's coming in and hearing what they have to say. You know, what do you need? What do you need? And is there something that you could do? What are your ideas of how we can change that? And not everything is something we can do, but we don't know what their ideas are, and we need to see them, look at them. What's the financials? What's the policy? So I feel like we're doing it together. It would just be a time of how do we move forward together and do better.
Yeah, sometimes even just listening to the people in your circle.
Yeah, you know? I think with some management styles, it just teaches us to get quiet.
Well, as you were saying about the gentleman in the submarine and the, you know, and I think that's true. I see it. I see it. I try to do things in a collective way. And I see the hardest thing is to get people to realize how important they are to whatever project it is we're doing. I always just say how important you are to the circle.
Right. And we have such remarkable people that work there. And I think that's what's hard for the community. They see that everything is working, and so they assume they want it to stay the same. Mm-hmm. Well, we're never going to not do our job. Right. These people suit up every day for the community. That's why I suit up, you know, dispatchers when they're answering a 911 call. It's to get you the help you need.
Yeah.
They want to do, we all want to do what's best for the community. That will never change,
right,
no matter who's at the helm.
Right.
But these people have some great ideas and want a comfortable working environment. And sometimes old management skills just aren't conducive to that.
Yeah. I give you credit because I've never been one to work in a system. When I want to see it change, I tend to work from the outside. Mm-hmm. But I really respect your approach, and I think it's important. I think it's an evolutionary time.
It is. Like I said, I know it started to shift in the 90s, but we're very slow to catch up to where we need to be. But we have a lot of younger people that work there. This is going to be their career, you know, for 20 years. It needs to be a healthy place to work. We have a tough job. It's a stressful job. Mm. And so we really need to have an environment where it doesn't add to that.
Where it feels safe. Where it feels there's trust, you know. Yeah, I think it's really critical. It sounds refreshing, you know. You had said something about jumping rank, and it took me a minute to understand that.
Well, jumping rank is a term we use when, like in the jail, we have corporal, sergeant, captain. Mm. And on the other side, there are sergeant, lieutenant, chief, sheriff.
Wow.
So we have a ranking system, and so like in the jail, corporals would be my direct supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens sometimes is people will ignore that and maybe go to the sergeant or go to the captain instead.
Mm.
And what happens is when upper ranking officers allow that, I think it diminishes the supervisory
role.
Not so much authority, but so then the corporal is kind of left in a position where, why are they there?
Right.
You know, if someone can just go above their head, if rather than allowing them, giving them the tools they need to do it when it's first brought up to the first line supervisor. There are situations where you would have to.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, if it's an issue with the corporal, you would have to go above them. But I think they need a little more, I'm trying to find the right word. I want to say someone to have their back a little more and support getting things back to them, letting them deal with it and giving them the tools to do so.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you had said earlier that there's four divisions in the jail, or I guess in the office of sheriff.
Well, you have the jail, you have dispatch, you have investigations, and you have road.
Wait, what's road?
That would be your patrol officers.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, the ones who are out there.
See, I told you I'm a
in
newbie.
The squads. Yeah, they're the ones that would come and arrest you if you went
wrong. Please don't. Okay.
So we have four divisions. Mm-hmm. And again, not to any fault of anyone, but as the jail division, you know, we're separate in the building, and we also sometimes feel separate from the office as a whole. And so I would like to bridge that gap a little bit. I know there has been some expression that has filtered back to me through the campaign that some of the road officers were a little concerned that I would just focus on the jail, and that could be further from the truth. I would never want any division to feel separate like what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to change and meld us a little more into things. I think as jailers, we do need to get more involved with some of the, you know, they have a youth shoot, they have National Night Out. I believe we only have one jailer really that sits on the committee. and we really should be more involved with that. But like I said, it's getting past that introverted, I don't want to do anything outside of work mentality.
Wait, what's National Night Out?
National Night Out was actually just earlier this month. You'll find lots of communities do it. And it's our fire, EMT, our road officers, and the whole community. We had it at the fairgrounds. And there's all kinds of activities, and it's for the community to get to know us better and to work together. And there's lots of fun things for kids to do. It was wonderful. We had thousands of people. I was there doing fingerprints on children.
Very hands-on.
Yeah. When my kids were small, you know, they always would do their fingerprints on a card, and you just keep those as a parent in case you should ever need them. So that's what I was doing down there in the heat. It was one of the hottest evenings, but very successful. The MedLink came with a helicopter.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's just to bridge the gap, because right now with law enforcement, you know, some communities are having issues.
Right.
And this keeps that open communication. You get to recognize the officers, and it's very involved. It's a wonderful thing. Two or three years they've been doing it, and it's wonderful. It's great activity. But again, I think as jailers, it would, with the other side, it would just be nice to do more things that meld us together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, give you, yeah. I think I see where that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always say, you know, most important thing is to be human first.
First and
you know,
foremost.
Be human, and then whatever hat you happen to wear, you know, that's the one you wear. So you also mentioned, we were talking earlier about how it was in the 90s. It was hard to keep people in positions, and now we're facing that again. So how is it for you guys?
There was a time when if there was an open position at the sheriff's office, whether it be jail, dispatch, road, it really didn't matter, you would have several applicants. You know, it could be upwards of 20 or more. And so you kind of were able to, you had a great group to choose from. Excuse me. And now I know in the jail, I think we had maybe one or two applicants when we've had open positions, and I don't know what's going to happen now. Dispatch has some open positions. I'm not sure why we're not. I don't think it's a law enforcement issue. I do know the academy said their numbers are going down as well, though, of people wanting to go to the academy and be in law enforcement.
Very interesting.
With what's going on in the communities, but everybody's shorthanded. Mm-hmm. Every business, I think the. Some of what we can do, I just think we need to recruit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to be in the academies more. I think we need to think about sponsorship. It's expensive, but running shorthanded and doing overtime is just as expensive.
That sponsoring candidates idea, I think that's because people have to usually pay for their schooling, right?
Right, unless you're sponsored. And that's right. For the roadside. If you work at the jail, because we are technically civilian.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were hired at the jail, you would actually work there, and then we would send you to the jail academy. With law enforcement, it's a little different. You have to have your 60 college credits, at least, or a degree in criminal justice before you go to the academy. And it's longer, it's more intense, and it's more expensive. And, yes, most are sponsored because it is very expensive.
It's very very much more complex than I had envisioned. And if all of you listening out there, we will be sending out quizzes later on to see what you got from it. But just to know that it's a lot. It's a lot. And here you are saying, I'm willing to take it on.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. And the other thing I like is that you're already committed. It's not like you're coming from the outside saying, I want to be sheriff. You know, it's like you're already in the game.
Yep.
And you're going to be in the game.
Yep.
So that's pretty awesome. So how has it been as a woman in what has historically been seen as a John Wayne kind of position?
It really has not been too bad for me. You know, personally, there hasn't been an issue. But we have more women in corrections than we do in the other side of law enforcement.
Really,
it's to be a road officer. I think the number was 13% is female, and when you get into corrections, we're upwards of 28% of the population working in corrections. So we're actually a little higher than if you wanted a road position.
And so you feel like people are, there's respect?
I think so. Once in a while in conversation, you might feel like you're not being heard, but you don't want to automatically assume it's because you're a woman. Sometimes it's just maybe what you're talking about, or maybe you didn't have enough knowledge about it. So I don't like to assume it's because I'm a woman. And I, again, with coworkers, I think in our direct field, I don't. You know, but we don't have women in leadership positions in law enforcement either. The number's even lower there, you know. But we do have, last I looked, I believe we have 4 female sheriffs in Wisconsin.
4 out of?
Out of, yeah, how many?
70-some
counties.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, you're really putting your neck out there.
Yeah.
That's good.
And I have to say, though, when we go places, my husband and I, and we'll wear our shirts,
they assume he's turban.
Pardon me?
They assume he's the turban
runner. They assume. That is true. But nobody has ever been giving me a strange look when they find out it's me. They've been very receptive.
Politically correct.
I have only had 1 or 2 incidences where people have kind of poo-pooed me because,
Bad.
Yeah. You're a woman?
Yeah.
Sheriff? Yeah. Yeah. But for the most part, and some people are excited because I'm a woman. You know, they don't even have to hear anything I say. It's like you're a woman. We're good.
Yeah,
it's like, well, I don't think that's right either. You should know what I stand
exactly.
for. But
yeah, we've seen that work in an opposite way.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good from your perspective. That's good to hear.
But we need more. We need
more. Yeah, for sure. There should be more balance.
We only have 1 female investigator.
And I think that there is a perspective that comes from that difference in gender, you know. I think
they don't see us as the tough people that we need to be,
and that's a
they're
mistake.
Wrong.
Yeah.
They're wrong. Yeah. Ask some of my coworkers about when they're going to see the other side of Janice.
Because I mean, a lot of those things that it's just so fabricated in our culture, you know. But that's a lot of what you're trying to ask people to rethink anyway.
Right, and you know, as a woman, you have to remember in a correctional situation or even in a road situation, first and foremost, it's training. We rely on our training. Mm. It isn't about my emotional side or that I'm, you know, how people see women, we're soft or whatever. No. When a situation happens, it's training.
Yeah.
You know, you run into a fight, it's about, you know, is someone going to take tasers, someone doing this, who's lead officer? It's all training. But you have to remember, too, that as road officers or correctional officers, investigation, even dispatch, you know, we come across situations where we need to be empathetic.
Right.
In corrections, not so much sympathetic. I don't have sympathy. They're where they're supposed to be. But we've had to tell people they've lost a loved one.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, these road officers have to go and tell the family someone's been in an accident. Do you want us to just be cold and you know, just by the book? Mm. Everybody wants a little emotion at certain times. But in the dangerous situations, it's training.
Yeah, yeah, and it really shouldn't matter. And we're coming to that culturally. We are. I always honor the kids that are bending gender. Because, you know, we don't need that straitjacket, I don't think. Well, I hope you're all enjoying this conversation. This is Dina Eccles, and I'm speaking with Janice Turbin, who's running for the office of Vernon County Sheriff. And I know my understanding is definitely growing with this discussion, and I hope it's beneficial to everyone who's listening. Well, that's very refreshing to hear that you don't feel, you know, a squeeze as a woman. But, you know, during the break, we also admitted that That squeeze is still on universally, but it's okay. It's changing. As we said before, it's an evolution, and we're part of that evolution. So I also wanted to talk to you about, you know, there's a lot of talk these days about restorative justice versus punitive. And I'd just love to hear you wax poetic about that.
I've learned so much being in corrections. So, and I think the largest education that I received was when we had the state inmates, you know, because that's the prison population. And it's the overflow. And then doing research as an instructor, I was very impressed. There was a 60-minute special done on a Connecticut prison. They call it The Rock. The governor of Connecticut had went to Germany to study their prisons because their prison system is very different from ours. And there was a large group of people that traveled with them. One of them was actually someone who had served 15 or 20 years for homicide. And they had reporters, they had wardens, they had other people that traveled with them. And in coming back, they realized, obviously, we can't just change the whole system the way Germany is. But they seem to know something we don't. So what they did in Connecticut is within the prison, they started a program called the TRUE program, where the officers, when they were showing it on camera, the officers were playing cards with the inmates. There was an inmate playing guitar. They have a lot of peer groups that hold them accountable, more so than the officers or the warden type of thing. And they have the people serving life can earn a right to be a mentor to some of the younger ones coming in that are serving like 2 to 4 years. There was one young man where one of the officers noticed that he was very good at basketball. And what they did was they all worked together. He ended up getting a basketball scholarship to a college. And, you know, so that's, to me, a great model. And we need to be doing more of it. Something that a lot of people don't realize about Vernon County Sheriff's Office, I can tell you, on the jail side, we are a very unique staff there, and most people, hopefully you don't know anybody who's been to jail, but if you spoke
with... I'm not telling.
But if you spoke with former inmates, even the state inmates, they will tell you we are a very different-looking animal, and it's because we have such an extraordinary staff that do such a good job at communication. These gentlemen came in expecting to be treated like they did in Milwaukee. And instead they were treated, you know, we called them Mr. Jones, Mr. Smith, that sort of thing. How was your trip over? You know, here are the general rules. You know, they were spoken to like human beings.
Like human beings,
and they
yeah.
responded so well.
Yes, of course.
So well. And, but yeah, so I think there are people who are realizing we need a change, and they're doing it in little doses, but not enough. We are still off the charts when it comes to the number of incarcerated
people in this country. We are off the charts
we are. Compared to any other country.
Correct. I looked it up last night. I was doing my homework. It's shocking.
It is. What was it, like
700%? Per capita, it's 633 per 1,000 people or something. It's crazy. And Wisconsin
yeah, is
it's
huge.
Number one.
We are.
So that brings us to the next question. Thank you. I didn't know you before this, and except you know the little bit that I was, but I knew that we were going to have an interesting conversation, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
These are ideas that need to come.
They are.
The whole restorative. Yeah. Well, again, going back to what we talked about earlier on, where Missouri is allowing corporal punishment again in schools.
I had no idea.
When I went on to read about that, that's the 19 states that never passed making that illegal, those places have the highest number of children per capita, they have the lowest incomes, they have, you know, the least amount of people going to college. I mean, it's just a horrific thing. So it's like we need to consider restoration. We need to consider these things.
Yeah.
So, so let's get to Wisconsin's racial injustice when it comes to incarceration. Because the numbers of blacks, natives, extremely high.
Yeah. When we had our prison population, it was easy to see that. Mm. And growing up in this community, I learned so much about what their life really is like. Mm-hmm. You know, they were great at communicating. And you learn that most of them, this was their life. They were born into gang life. You know, mm-hmm. dad, right. grandpa, right. everybody was part of a gang. And not that that's an excuse. I don't mean it that way. But it's a different culture than, you know, it's easy for us to stand on the outside growing up in Viroqua and saying, well, I just don't understand why they would live that way. Well, that's their life. I did learn that there were some coming through our system going to prison for things that if you were arrested locally for those charges, you would not be going to prison. You might be doing a year of jail time.
Wow.
So it was hard for me to understand, well, but they're going to prison. They did this once. Mm-hmm. This, we have a local kid that's done it five times and isn't going to prison. Mm-hmm. That's when I saw an imbalance. I don't want to say it for sure for race either.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely something that's out of whack.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your honesty. I appreciate that. Because if you don't name it, you can't change it. And you have to see it.
Sure.
And you're not in, I am not putting you in that position to do that kind of change. Mm-hmm. But those of us who are listening, you know, who get to really, you know, a long time ago, somebody said something that I found very interesting. They said there was a long line of people. So they went to the people in the back and they said, where are you going? They were marching. And they said, well, we don't know. We're following the people in the front. So they went to the front and said, well, where are you going? And they said, well, we don't know. We're following. The people behind us are pushing us.
Oh.
So if that's the case, if that's mm-hmm. basically what politics is, mm-hmm. then we have a right to become educated, as we've been talking about throughout this conversation.
Right.
To, you know, that we all have that leadership position.
And we have, you know, when you talk about race and injustice, it's in our prison and jail systems, the mental health coming in is extraordinary. Mm. And it doesn't solve it. Mm. But ultimately, they do crimes, they come to jail, it's probably not really where they need to be, but they have to have consequences for their behavior. But our mental health system is broken, our drug rehabilitation system is broken. You know, so we have to look. There's so many other factors that we bring into corrections. Mm-hmm.
There's a great organization that I'm privy to. It's a religious-based. It's called Wisdom Wisconsin. I don't know if you're familiar or people out there. If you want to know about people who are working to change this system, which obviously that's not your role, but it might put you out of a job one day.
But that's okay.
Yeah, there you go. Because of the high rates of incarceration of non-whites and everything that they're finding out. They are wisdomwisconsin.org, and you can go there. And if you go to the wisdomwisconsin.org/criminaljustice, you will find that much of their effort is led by ex-incarcerated people organizing. And it's actually called XPO, I think, is what it, you know. What. So it gets back to what you were saying. That why your jail has a different added, or what they found in Connecticut mm-hmm. too.
Yeah,
I think we can all learn from one another, and I think we need to, because you know we're here, we're on this planet. People get, you know, they're in prison, they're going to get let out. How they were treated may have a deep impact on how they're going to be when they leave.
And I think that goes back to the education of law enforcement as well. Mm. You know, there was a time when we are taught to come in with that heavy mm-hmm. attitude and that tough attitude, tough mm-hmm. exterior. And when they interviewed officers that work in that TRUE program, they said it was so nice to just not have to be that, that we can talk with mm-hmm. them and joke back and forth and treat them more human. They actually appreciated it. Mm-hmm. And that's something, like I said, we just naturally do here. But that's not always what they're taught. You know, they're taught to be these tough. They come in very heavy. You know, I'm the boss. You're mm-hmm. the inmate. And they're finding that doesn't always work either. So, again, evolving in what we teach officers and teach them how to be. Mm-hmm.
So there is a word that keeps cropping up that you would think of as historically old. It was called abolition. And abolition was something, there were blacks and whites, you know, that wanted to end slavery. Mm-hmm. But there are modern-day abolitionists, and they're advocating for a world that doesn't rely on punitive measures as a response to harm. They recognize it as a long-term goal. They see that this isn't going to happen overnight. Like some people was like, defund the police and da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And that may all be part of it, but the long-term goal is that we provide community safety, security, mutual aid, and harm reduction, you know, when we can. Mm-hmm. That if we can focus on that, and then instead of putting money into, and this is a lot what wisdom is doing too, instead of putting money into building more jails, you know, to create more community, allow the communities to change, because they can. And I definitely tend to fall in that category. But at the same time, we can have this conversation, and I can totally respect what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But I also want to keep learning from the abolitionists.
Yeah, and I think for me, that's like when I saw that 60-minute special, when I saw how a German prison was run, because no one does life
right
there.
Wow.
They're correctional officers. It's very, they're very choosy. It's very difficult to become a correction officer in Germany. And it's 2 years of education in social, psychology, you know, all the aspects, because they look different. And the minute that someone goes to prison, it's really about rehabilitation from that moment mm-hmm. on. It's we need them to become better citizens. We need them to, you know, they're human beings. We need to get them back in the community. And although it's hard for me to imagine a world where we didn't have some sort of jail or prison, because I do see I see the mindset of some that come through there, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure rehabilitation would work. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine that, but I can imagine a better system. And so when Connecticut did that, I'd like to see that in more prisons. I would love to see something like that in a Wisconsin prison, just a program that starts building towards that. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, good. And like I said, I know I'm an abolitionist, and I know I'm an anarchist too. So, but I can have these conversations.
Because we're a wonderful world of all different kinds of ideas, and that's great.
And they can emerge, you know, things can emerge. And this is what we've been talking about. It's really great. So there is another program that I'm aware of that I'm going to toss out to you, and maybe we'll get to be friends more and I can talk to you about it. It's called the Peace Education Program. And I've known about it for quite a few years now. And it started out mostly in jails all over the world, but it's now being used by lots of different schools and educators and things. And it's video-based workshops that help people discover their own inner strength and personal peace.
I have not.
No, I know. It's good. It's good. We'll talk, girl.
Yeah.
It's put out by an organization called the Prem Rawat Foundation.
Because we love programming mm-hmm. at the jail.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Anything that will help them. You know, we do offer AODA and NA and Bible study and things like that. And the inmates really do enjoy having and learning, believe it or not. They like having programming. So anything new would be great.
It's good. It's free. And
it's
I've been
in, better.
our nonprofit has been engaged with it. So I'll definitely.
Yes, because everything we have is volunteer based, which mm-hmm. shout out to them, because we have wonderful people that come into the mm-hmm. jail. And we are so grateful for them. So shout out to them. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And we could use more.
So here I am. We've gone almost through the hour, and you're running for sheriff.
I am.
You've basically not touted yourself in that way. You've talked about what you see, you talked mm-hmm. about, and I think I really commend you for that.
Oh, thank you. You know, really. So much. Thank you.
So, but if people were interested in seeing you or, you know.
Well, I try, you know, I have a Facebook page, mm-hmm. Turben for Sheriff. You can find me on Facebook.
T-U-R-B-E-N.
B-E-N. Yep. Everybody always wants to put an I in there, but it's T-U-R-B-E-N. Mm-hmm. And I try to post where I'm going to be, events that I'll be at. And you're welcome to private message me. Anything that you want to ask me, like I said, some people have had some challenging questions, but that's okay. We should be challenged. Mm-hmm. We're running for a very important office.
Yes.
Our community needs an opportunity to ask those questions. Some forums, if anybody wants to put together some forums or a debate, that would be even greater. That's what our community has been asking for. Mm. When are we going to have a forum? When is there going to be a debate?
So there's nothing scheduled?
There's nothing scheduled. Nobody has reached out to me. The chamber had talked about a forum some time ago, but then it just kind of fizzled out.
We may have to look into that.
Yeah, yeah. Because uh-huh. we're a great bunch. You know, mm-hmm. I have great things to say about my opponents, and we all have an idea of what and how we feel the sheriff's office should be run. We're all good people, but you should hear our ideas and what we're working towards. Mm-hmm. So
good for you. Wow. Thank you. So Turben for Sheriff, yep. Viroqua. I mean, yep. Vernon County, but a Viroqua girl.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's important. Well, that hour went by really quickly, and I really want to thank you.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me. This is great.
Yes, it's been fun, really. Got to know you. And so for coming in, and especially for all the work that you're undertaking, that you're doing. It's not easy.
It isn't. But, you know, it's easy to sit and say, oh, I wish it was this way. I wish it was that way. Mm-hmm. And to finally make that decision where, you know, I'm tired of saying we could be this, we could be that. I'm going to do it.
Let's do it.
Excellent.
Well, I hope you all have enjoyed this. I have immensely. And thank you for listening, and have a great day.